From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Ralf Rangnick's regime is off to a winning start. So which Manchester United players can fire you through the frantic festive period? All that and more on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Hello again, thanks for joining us on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast, your essential Game Week 16 preview coming right up, all in the company of journalist Tom Williams. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Kelly.
Julian Laron is also on the podcast. He today has us up even earlier than usual due to his daughter's nativity. Jules, it's a big morning in your household.
Oh, crazy this morning. Hi, everyone. And sorry for the really early start.
No, you don't need to be sorry. It's all good. And our final guest is soon to be taking her daughter to a tap dancing exam, proof she quite literally puts family first. It's FPL family's Sam Bonfield.
Morning, Kelly. It's a busy day all round today.
It is a very busy day all round, but that's enough frivolous chat. On to the important stuff, FPL. Now, game week 15 saw wins for all of the top six, except for Chelsea, who lost at West Ham 3-2, despite Mason Mount returning double digits for the second game week in a row. We'll have more on the Hammers side of things later. Spurs also continued their upturn in form under Antonio Conte, with Son bagging 13 points. So there is uncertainty over Spurs' options ahead of game week 16. A man we tipped last week was at the double, Man City's Bernardo Silva, with 15 points in their 3-1 win at Watford. But the game week's top scorer was an unlikely one. Ezri Konsa got 17 points in Aston Villa's third win from four under Steven Gerrard against Leicester. So the question is, did our panel have any of those players? Let's start with you, Tom. A fifth green arrow in a row for you.
Yeah, I mean, continuing what has been a decent run of form, although had Son Heung-min not done the business for me, I think I would have struggled a bit. I'm also reasonably confident that that good run is going to come to an abrupt end this weekend. So I probably shouldn't be too smug about things, if we're honest.
That's the optimism we like here on the podcast, Tom. Thanks for bringing your game this morning. Jules, what's happened with you? You're always talking the talk, but 38 points last week. And I noticed that you took out Rafinha a bit too early, potentially.
Maybe, although you only got an assist, but I put Jota on. And you know, as often in our game, then I watched the Liverpool game against Wolves and he should have had a quadruple easily, maybe a quintuple or a sextuple or a seventuple or eightuple. So many chances he had, especially the one that Cody blocks on the line. And I'm like, surely you did that on purpose, Diogo Jota. For me, who just kindly put you in my team, I was literally like, do you say like you take your hair off your head? Is that something like that?
Yeah, pulling your hair out.
Yeah, pulling my hair out. Watching that game. A 7-2-pole he should have had. 7 goals. And instead, I got 3 stupid points. I was really livid. And then Gabriel and Ramsdale managed to throw away the game at Everton and the clean sheet as well. So it was not a good weekend for me. I was crazy, man.
Okay, so frustration for Jules then, Sam. But no such problems for you. You're up to 141,000 in the world. And that Bernardo Silva transfer is looking to be better week on week, isn't it?
Oh, 25 lovely points that man has bought me since I transferred him in. Honestly, I couldn't be more delighted with him. That was a good decision. Although, to be fair, I thought Foden looked fantastic in that game and was unlucky not to return more than he did. So in some ways, the midfield double up at Manchester City seems to be on with those two.
Yeah, a few question marks over Foden after what looked like some form of injury that he suffered in midweek. A quick word on Emile Smith-Rowe. Are you worried about him? Because that is an issue that we all had.
Yeah, that was a disappointing one, wasn't it? I hate those when they seem to be absolutely fine going into the weekend and then all of a sudden on the game day, it's like, oh, has a bit of a groin injury. I guess we just have to wait and see what Arteta says in his next press conference about Emile Smith-Rowe and make a decision there. The thing is, with him being so cheap, you probably could afford to bench him and then have him for the midweek games next week if he's not available at the weekend.
Yeah, keep an eye out for the latest on that one. That's how our panel did. It's time now to check in with those of you in our official FPL Pod Mini League. It was a bad week for our leader, Sani Siddiqui, who scored 38 points, and the gap to the top is now just 9 points. It is hotting up. He does still have an incredible 1,093 points in total, though. The standout player was Meju Oh, who scored a brilliant 72 points, moving into our top 10. If you do want to join the league, the code is 1KIKS7. It's time now, though, to look ahead. But as I mentioned, there is some doubt over the availability of Tottenham Hotspurs players after head coach Antonio Conte confirmed that several players, as well as staff, have tested positive for COVID-19. This means that at this point, we don't know what impact that will have on Spurs' game week 16 match against Brighton and Hove Albion. Please keep across fantasy.premierleague.com and at Official FPL for all the latest news. For now, though, let's do a stock check on how things are going for Ralf Rangnick's Manchester United and which players could come into our sides. Well, the Ralf Rangnick era has lift off at Manchester United. A 1-0 win over Crystal Palace, courtesy of a second-half Fred strike before a much-changed team drew with Young Boys in the Champions League this week. Now, we spoke on the podcast at the time of his appointment about the impact it could have on their players. So ahead of their quite incredible fixture list, let's see how the panel are feeling about them now. A reminder, they only face one of last season's top five between now and game week 28. In March. Tom, what did you make of them against Crystal Palace?
I mean, it wasn't a spectacular performance in the sense that they only won 1-0 and were reliant on a late goal from an unusual source in Fred's right foot. But it did feel like a fresh start. It was a different way of approaching a game. Ralf Rangnick has already put in place this 4-2-2-2 system, which he used at RB Leipzig, notably. Which means more attacking players on the pitch than we perhaps saw from United previously. And then in defence, we've seen new players getting more game time, notably Diogo Dalot, Alex Telles. There seems to be a bit more of an intensity to the way that United play without the ball. And given that incredible run of fixtures, I can see a lot of FPL managers bringing in Man United players over the weeks ahead. I think at both ends of the pitch, if Rangnick's going to tighten them up defensively, That makes United's defensive assets more appealing. And obviously, we know all about the firepower they have at the sharp end of the pitch. Despite having given it the big end a couple of weeks ago when I was last on the pod about bringing in Cristiano Ronaldo, I didn't actually do that in the end because I had a last-minute panic. And it actually worked out quite well because had I done that, obviously Ronaldo didn't score last week, and bringing in Diogo Jota was the other part of that plan, which, as Jules knows, didn't work out all that well with that Wolves-Liverpool game. But I am now looking at bringing Ronaldo in, and I think I'll be keeping a close eye on some of those United defenders as well.
So Tom didn't do the Cristiano Ronaldo transfer, but at the time of recording, he's had over 150,000 transfers, and I think that's only going to rise. Is that now a viable option, do you think, Sam?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, my plan this week was to bring in Ronaldo. I think I was giving Harry Kane that game against Norwich, and of course he blanked yet again in that one. So the obvious transfer, I think, if you own Harry Kane, is to now move to Ronaldo, given that whilst Kane's fixtures stay nice at Spurs, Ronaldo's are just wonderful at United. And I think you have to look at talisman, don't you, over Christmas. You have to look at players that are guaranteed start time. And whilst Ronaldo's age needs to come into this, and will he be able to play 90 minutes every time, he will get goals surely over these fixtures that he's got coming up.
What about you, Jules? Is that a similar transfer you're looking at as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, me and Sam, Harry Kane is our son, really. We've had him since pretty much he was born. And then I think there's a point where loyalty and faithfulness has to stop. Unfortunately, Harry, I know you're listening. So you can go wherever you want to go, in the bin, at home, on your sofa, anywhere, but not in my team anymore because you don't give me anything. So I think Cristiano is a fair replacement considering all those games. He might not play every 3 days. I think at some point physically, Rangnick will want to rest him like he did in the Champions League, for example, like most of the starters anyway, against Young Boys. So, but I agree with everything Sam said, I think, and Tom. I think Ronaldo could be key in all those games. In those very nice fixture lists for United.
Yeah, just 2 points in 11 of his last 12 matches for Harry Kane, still on one goal this season. One issue people did have with Ronaldo is the fact he is 12.4 million. And for that money, people often want someone they'll captain regularly. With those fixtures, is that now something we could consider?
Yeah, and with good reason, because Salah has produced the goods in practically every game. I think like a lot of FPL managers, I'm kind of waiting to see what happens in this new era at Man United. There were obviously positive signs in that game against Palace. The fixture list couldn't be any kinder. So you would expect that United will gradually pick up steam over the weeks ahead. I probably want to see a little bit more evidence of that before I start betting the house on Man United players. But I think if you bring Ronaldo in, he presents you with a nice potential alternative to Salah, because occasionally Liverpool will have a tricky fixture and you might not necessarily feel as comfortable backing Salah with the armband. So if you've got Ronaldo in your team and he does have a nice fixture, which let's face it, he's basically guaranteed to have given United's fixture list, he might be a decent alternative.
In that game, Ronaldo has support from Rashford with Bruno Fernandes and Jadon Sancho playing in behind. On this podcast a few weeks ago, we talked about Jadon Sancho. How do you feel having watched him play in a Rangnick team now, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I think Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho both look like fantastic options. Suddenly we have players that are going to be used to their full potential in those positions that we would want them to be in. With Ronaldo up top, they're going to form what would look to be an ideal partnership, to be honest. So I think if you don't have the money to go Ronaldo, and you know, you said earlier, he is 12.4 million. And if you've got a strategy where you haven't got somebody like Harry Kane up top that you can easily upgrade or change, then maybe getting to the likes of Rashford, Sancho, or even maybe Bruno Fernandes might be just that little bit easier. So I don't think there's anything wrong with going for one of the midfield options at Manchester United if you can't afford Ronaldo. And to be honest, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing it if you just fancy them more.
What about Mason Greenwood as well? Any consideration for him, Jules? Because he played well and scored against Young Boys. Do you think we could see him return to his early season form?
The problem with Greenwood, I think, is he's not a starter anymore. I think that sort of front four, if you're one of Rashford, Sancho, Bruno and Cristiano are your front four. So then that means you can take Greenwood and at his price, why not? If you can afford to leave him on the bench, good. I think he will come in the rotation because they will have all those games to play through the festive period and all of that. So I think he might start, but he won't start every single game. So it's a bit risky. At the start of the season, he almost looked guaranteed the time to play every week and start. And then he was put on the bench first by Solskjaer and now by Rangnick too. And I can't see him coming back and be a regular starter in all those games coming up. Unlike, like we said, Bruno Fernandes or Ronaldo, Sancho, Rashford, etc. So you can have him for sure and see where the rotation will start, because at some point Rangnick will rotate, but I don't think he's a guaranteed starter for you, so it's always a bit risky.
Okay, so it's a no for now for Mason Greenwood, but what about the fullbacks? As Tom mentioned, that's a clear way that Ralf Rangnick wants to play, aren't they? So what are you feeling about Alex Telles and Diogo Dalot?
Yeah, I look especially at Diogo Dalot, who's 4.4 million, only owned by 0.6% of our managers. So I think I think he's a really good option, to be fair, because we've saw Rangnick already being very happy with the not conceding against Palace. And I think this is something that he put a lot of work into making that defense more solid. Varane is going to come back too and play a centre back with Maguire. So you could see easily United not conceding at all in the next five games, as we said, who are really good fixtures for them. So that could be Dalot. With clean sheet points all the time, and then with the ball, he's far better than Wan-Bissaka, for example. He goes forward, he crosses the ball well, he's a very intelligent player. So I think Dalot is a really good shot, especially as only 4.4 million.
Yeah, we do like a cheap defender, don't we? Well, next up on Manchester United's favourable run is a trip to Norwich City on Saturday evening. Let's see what other fixtures are taking place in game week 16. But it's an earlier deadline this week, as on Friday night, Brentford take on Watford at 8 p.m, meaning your deadline is Friday at 6:30 p.m. UK time. The early game on Saturday sees Wolves travel to leaders Manchester City. Then Arsenal look to get back to winning ways against Southampton. Third place Chelsea are aiming for the same against Leeds. And Liverpool welcome a familiar face in Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa. Then it's Norwich, Man United before on Sunday. There are three 2 p.m. fixtures as it stands, with Brighton welcoming Spurs, Burnley, West Ham and Leicester versus Newcastle. And the final game of match week 16 is on Sunday at 4:30 p.m, Palace versus Everton. Time then to ask our panellists to take it away now with their fixture of choice, starting with the early game on Saturday, Jules.
Yeah, Manchester City against Wolves. There's a lot of interesting thing there. One is the fact that Wolves, certainly when Nuno was the manager, did well against Pep. They won two games, remember, in 2019. They lost 4-1 and 3-1 in the last two, so it's not always as good. But I think we've said it before, Pep and City against the back five usually don't always struggle, but could find it difficult at times to sort of break them down and everything. We saw that in the Champions League against Lyon, for example, and many times in the Premier League. So that's interesting. The fact that how Raul Jimenez usually scores or at least does well against City is another one. I'm a bit worried with City defensively, because if you look now, I think it's no clean sheet in 5 in all competition. They concede goals. Sometimes it's just at the end when they're 3-0 up, and it's not a big deal for their score and their results and the 3 points. It's a big deal for us, though, if you've got a Cancelo, a Ruben Diaz, Edison, whoever you might have in that defense, because somehow it looks like they lose a bit of focus maybe towards the end of some matches where they're easily in front and dominating. So this, I find that really strange, because they usually have been quite ruthless at times defensively. But now that concerns me a little bit with Cancelo in my team, because offensively, I think he's not looking as sharp as he used to. And defensively, the lack of clean sheet is a problem.
Yeah, João Cancelo is still the defender in the game with the most shots. We've already discussed Bernardo and what a masterstroke that was bringing him in, Sam. We talked about him being the best option probably in that City midfield last weekend. Did you feel better seeing the likes of Bernardo, Cancelo all rested in the Champions League?
Oh, yes. As the two Man City players that are in my team, seeing Pep not play them in the Champions League was absolutely wonderful news. Bernardo Silva and Cancelo, thank you very much. That surely means that they're going to start the weekend. I have some concerns, like Jules says, about Cancelo, about the clean sheet potential. But equally, you know, I think the fixture is a nice one. And whilst Wolves have been better defensively, they don't really score many. Going forward, they've been weak in front of goal, particularly over the last couple of weeks. So I can't see them scoring that many goals. So hopefully we're in for some defensive returns from Man City defenders this weekend.
Yeah, is there a slight word of caution to be had, Tom, from the fact that Wolves were on the verge of their fourth successive clean sheet until that late Divock Origi winner? They did look so resilient, didn't they, defensively against Liverpool. Does that worry you?
Yeah, I mean, Wolves did look solid. And generally speaking, and this has been a feature of Wolves' games over the past two or three seasons, their games tend to be quite low scoring. They don't let too many goals in, but they don't score too many goals either. And given the fact that they kept Liverpool at bay for as long as they did, albeit finally sort of cracking in stoppage time, I think that will give them encouragement that they can go to City and make things difficult. But at the same time, the level of control that City showed last weekend against Watford was really, really remarkable. And I think they present teams different kinds of problems to the problems that Liverpool present. I suspect it'll be a long afternoon for Wolves. But at the same time, given the fact that their games tend to be quite low scoring, I wouldn't have thought that they're in for a thrashing. Although obviously, if they are then thrashed, I'll be very grateful if no one could remind me that I've just said that.
It's all recorded, Tom. We're keeping these for the end of season bloopers reel. Quick word on Raul Jimenez as well from a Wolves perspective. Jules, you've got him. Will you play him in this fixture?
I don't think so. I haven't decided yet. It's unlikely. I don't think they will score. I agree with Sam. I think this one could be a good one if you've got Cancelo, Diaz or the others. And in typical fashion, I thought he was a viable option, integral to what Wolves were doing well. And then he literally stopped doing well as soon as I put him in my team. So, you know, too many of us know that feeling.
I hope you haven't cursed Diogo Jota in the same way after his glorious misses last weekend at Molineux.
Weekend. You never know with me. You know.
A quick word on Raul Jimenez. He has actually got 2 goals and 3 assists from his 5 Premier League meetings with Manchester City. So he does have form. But Jules is banking on his Man City players to deliver this week. Sam, are you feeling the same for your Liverpool players at home to Aston Villa?
Oh, I definitely am. I mean, these two games last season were just ridiculous, weren't they? There were 12 goals in 2 Premier League games between these two sides last season, including that unforgettable 7-2 win that Villa put in over Liverpool around this time last year. In those two matches, Watkins got 4 goals and an assist. Salah got 3 goals. There was one for Trent. There was one for McGinn, who also picked up a couple of assists. It was absolutely bonkers. Now, what does that mean for us in terms of the defence? Well, that remains to be seen. Obviously, with Steven Gerrard, it's his first match back at Liverpool as manager of another club. So that will add another element to the game. And what we have seen from Aston Villa under Gerrard's management so far is so much better defensively and also in attack. He seems to have stabilised them massively. I think this could be a really, really good game. The problem I think Aston Villa have is the record that returning Reds have when they go as a manager of another club towards Anfield. They've been 14 losses in the last 16 matches when an ex-player has returned as manager of another club at Anfield. I don't know. Let's see. I think for me, this should be the continuation of some Liverpool points. But if you own an Aston Villa asset, I'll be playing them too, because Liverpool are gettable, and we've seen that over recent weeks.
So while Sam thinks the Liverpool defence are gettable, Tom, Trent Alexander-Arnold, regardless of if Liverpool don't keep a clean sheet, still seems to be a points magnet, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the joys of being a Trent Alexander-Arnold owner, is that even if Liverpool do let goals in, he's such a threat. He's so integral to the way that they play in the opposition's half of the pitch, both in open play and in terms of set pieces, that he's always got a decent chance of returning. I've had him in since pretty much the start of the season. And I think the fact that he does offer you that attacking threat means that even if Liverpool are up against a team liable to catch them on the counter-attack, perhaps, and as Sam says, you know, we've seen signs of improvement from Villa already since Steven Gerrard came in, that the attacking threat that Trent Alexander-Arnold carries means that, you know, there's never really any sense in benching him.
Diogo Jota, Jules, sorry to bring it up again. He's got 4 goals in 4. Unfortunately, though, 2 of those came in 1 game. So, of course, he didn't score last week. You're not going to part company with him already, are you?
No. The goal, I just think it was one of those afternoons where nothing went his way, despite all the chances that he had, or certainly all the good opportunities, especially that one again that was blocked by Cody on the line. But he's usually so clinical, so efficient in what he does. Everything, he doesn't always touch the ball much, but when he's involved, he's usually pretty good. So I was just surprised, but I think he's an amazing player in that team, the way this team work. And I think he will get you points and goals, I think, starting this weekend against Villa. Even if I agree with the guys, the Villa defence is much stronger than it was under Dean Smith, so certainly the end of the Dean Smith era. But I think Liverpool will have too much going forward for this Villa team. And I don't know what kind of impact Gerrard coming back for his own players, for Villa, will have. Are you like pumped up to give him a win or a good result because you want him to have that what sort of a good comeback? Like Sam said, it's really rare at Liverpool. Or does he have the other impact for a Villa player, which is like a lot of pressure to try to deliver for Gerrard in a very hostile environment, a very emotional afternoon? I suspect I will be there. I'll be at the game and I'm really looking forward to it. But I wonder if that can also have a negative impact on a Villa player, thinking like, oh, we have to win for the manager, for the boss, and just put extra pressure on you that you already don't need when you face Liverpool away from home. So it'd be very interesting to see how those Villa players react to it.
Sam, a quick word on the Liverpool attack double up of Diogo Jota and Mohamed Salah with Roberto Firmino returning. Are you concerned about his minutes at all, or is that still a nice option to have both of them?
No, I think it's still a fantastic option. I mean, Firmino has been out for a while now, and over this busy Christmas period, the very last thing that you need is to bring a player that's been injured back and then play them for 90 minutes repetitively twice, 3 times in a week. So I do think that Firmino will come back in gradually. And also, you know, with the African Cup of Nations coming up in January, Klopp has also got to get used to a team that potentially doesn't have Salah and Mane in it. So giving Diogo Jota and Firmino time together on the pitch probably is a good idea.
And just a quick word on Villa, Tom. 3 wins from 4 under Gerrard. Would you hold fire on bringing in their assets until maybe next week after they've got this fixture out of the way?
Yes, probably. I mean, I think we've arrived at a really dynamic time in the season. At the one hand, we know that the fixture schedule gets very congested in the weeks ahead, which will probably mean more rotation. And then there's a lot of new managers who are just starting out and, you know, trying to turn around the fortunes of the clubs that they've been employed by, one of whom, of course, is Steven Gerrard. So I generally think that in this kind of early period, and we've had a lot of new managers arriving at pretty much exactly the same time, and I think Villa are one of those clubs from an FPL perspective who it's worth keeping a close eye on. You look at the way that they've approached their game since Gerrard came in, notably, you know, the fact that he wants his fullbacks you know, getting forward a lot, which is something we saw from him at Rangers. Matty Cash, Matt Target, Ashley Young, if he plays, albeit he's listed as a midfielder. I think those are the sort of players who could turn out to be decent options in the weeks ahead. But yeah, for now, I think particularly given the fixture this weekend, probably best to just sort of hang back and see how things go.
We'll end our preview of this fixture with a stat that I like. Sadio Mane scored the Premier League's fastest ever hat-trick at home to Aston Villa. He has 6 goals and 2 assists from 7 meetings with them. So if you don't have him, maybe something to consider, though we can obviously only have 3 Liverpool players. Our final fixture in detail, Tom, Arsenal versus Southampton.
Yes, Arsenal obviously not in great form at the moment, having lost 3 of their last 4 games, including that pretty dismal display at Goodison Park on Monday. I've got 2 Arsenal players. I've got Ben White in my defence and Emile Smith Rowe in my midfield. Crossing my fingers that Smith Rowe is going to be okay after the groin issue that forced him to miss that trip to Everton. I am pinning my hopes on Arsenal showing some of the defensive solidity in this game that they have done at the Emirates this season. Their home record is generally pretty good. Since they lost at home to Chelsea in game week 2, they've picked up 16 points from a possible 18 at home. Clean sheets in each of their last 2 home matches, 1-0 against Watford, 2-0 against Newcastle. And if you look at that Arsenal defence, lots of attractively priced FPL options. Aaron Ramsdale, we all know, is having a great season in goal. He's still only 5 million total ownership, just under 15%. Ben White, who I've got, 4.4 million, which is super cheap for a defender in a very reliable defence. And not just that, but a guaranteed starter. Takahiro Tomiyasu as well, 4.7 million, only selected by 4.6% of FPL managers. So differential potential there. We saw Kieran Tierney come back in that Everton game, having had to play second fiddle to Nuno Tavares since, for the last few weeks at least. We know what an FPL asset he can be when he gets a bit of wind in his sails. I'd be inclined to sort of wait to see how that left-back situation shakes out. Pinning my hopes on Arsenal, shrugging off this disappointing run of recent form and getting back to some of that defensive solidity that we've seen of them at home.
Jules is remaining very quiet during this chat. He's normally raving about his beloved Arsenal.
Just waiting for my moment, you know?
Come on then. Have you got any lowdown on Emile Smith Rowe? Do you think, is he going to be fit, Jules, just quickly?
I think he would be fit for that game. He's played a lot. If you look at it last season and especially this season too, and I think this was more precaution than anything else. The fact that he missed that game at Everton, and he will be ready for this weekend, and then playing every 3 days pretty much for 2 months now. So I think if you have him, you can be reassured, because I think he should be playing. It's interesting because Arsenal have this bad habit, especially when they have the lead, whether it's home or away, especially away from home, to then sit back a bit. We saw that in against Everton for sure, but even before that, the stats show it too, which is a bit worrying really, because they then invite the pressure. But I agree with Tom. I think defensively, they will go back to being more solid than the goals they conceded against Everton and United, especially in the last 2 games. And then going forward, I think there's still a lot of room for improvement there from Saka, Smith-Rowe, and whoever plays up front, like Lacazette, Aubameyang, Nketiah, whoever you want, Martinelli, if he stays fit. So it's interesting, but this is a game that they should win without conceding a goal. And I think if you've got some of the asset defensively or offensively, it's a good time to play them.
If they're both fit, who's the best option, Jules, out of Emile Smith Rowe and Bukayo Saka? Only 0.1 between them now in price.
I feel that, especially the way the season has gone and the confidence that they both had, that Smith Rowe can bring you more goals. He's got this amazing ability to make those runs from midfield and then be at the end of crosses. And he had certainly his expected goals and how clinical he was. I'm not sure how sustainable it was earlier. He used to shoot once per game and score every time. So it was never going to keep that up. But I think he's still very dangerous for that. For Saka, he's more of a creator, really, than a finisher. And we've seen that before. Yes, he scored against Spurs, for example. But I think, as we saw for the Nketiah chance against Everton, which is a great cross by Saka, I think this is more his game than Smith Rowe. So I would personally go for Smith Rowe every time. But I can see the appeal of Bukayo Saka too.
Before we move on, Sam, maybe this isn't the fixture to play him in, but Tino Livramento, no returns in four matches for him. Are you getting worried about his returns?
No, I don't think you can get too worried about a player that is that cheap. He's just such a fantastic enabler to have on your bench, and you can bring him on in the games when they have nicer fixtures. And actually, Southampton do have some nicer fixtures coming up over the next few weeks. So yes, they've got Arsenal, but then after that, Crystal Palace and Brentford, then a couple of tricky ones against West Ham and Spurs. But, you know, I think there's a couple of games in there, particularly against Palace and Brentford, where you could play Livramento, and he has, we've seen already, got attacking threat, so it's not just about the clean sheets with him.
Just on Livramento and his attacking threat, I made this point about Tariq Lamptey of Brighton on a recent podcast, but every time you watch Southampton, you see Livramento. He's so heavily involved in their attacking play. He's such a sort of buccaneering style of fullback, constantly getting the ball in advanced positions and trying to get himself into the penalty area, that even in games where you don't expect Southampton to keep a clean sheet, even in games where you expect them to be under the cosh, there's still a chance of him popping up with points. So yeah, I'm with Sam on that. I see no reason to take him out of your side, particularly as he's still so cheap.
Okay, so stick with Livramento then. Right, it is now time for us to move on to the long view. You know the drill by now. The Premier League's fixture difficulty rating is back out again as we take a look at who has the most favourable upcoming run. If you want to do the same, then the FDR can be found at PremierLeague.com. So Manchester United top the FDR, and closely behind them are West Ham United. It's Burnley, Arsenal, Norwich, Southampton, Watford and then Palace. Are they back on our radar, Tom? Were they ever off it?
I haven't had any West Ham players for a while, which has made me feel a little bit anxious at times. I would quite like to bring in Jared Bowen at some point. He is 6.5 FPL million, owned by fewer than 5% of FPL managers, so real differential. And he showed great form in that win at home to Chelsea last weekend with a goal and an assist and an 11-point haul. And he has, you know, he has performed at that level in quite a few games this season. The one thing that gives me pause when it comes to Jared Bowen and maybe some of other West Ham's players is that they tend to perform better against the bigger teams. So although their fixtures might look very kind, that's not necessarily a guarantee that they'll get the sort of returns that they've been getting in some of those games against the big hitters. When you look at Bowen this season, 11 points against Chelsea, 9 points against Liverpool, he seems to really rise to the occasion when they're playing the big guns. But yeah, I just wonder whether West Ham are going to steamroller all these teams who are beneath them in the table. I wonder whether they're sometimes better set up to play against the big clubs who are going to have lots of the ball and leave space in behind. Although, am I just saying that to make myself feel better about the fact that I don't have any West Ham players? It's a possibility.
We've talked about Antonio a lot on this podcast, Sam. This is a run a lot of us have been holding him for, and he finally returned last weekend, albeit only an assist.
Yeah, and a bit of a lucky one at that. I've been holding Antonio for all this time, mostly on the basis that I've owned him since pre-season and his price has gone up so much that if I sold him, this is the run that I wanted him back for, well, almost, probably after that Arsenal game in game week 17. Selling him and then trying to afford him back was then going to be problematic. So I've held him all this time. And I do think we saw signs from West Ham of the West Ham that we loved earlier on in the season against Chelsea at the weekend. They'd been a little bit offish. They'd been a bit sluggish. And maybe that was in part because they're getting used to, you know, playing in European competitions alongside playing in the Premier League. Lots of game time. Now, that's not going to get any easier over the next few weeks because, of course, there's still a League Cup quarterfinal to play against Spurs in a few weeks' time, as well as Europa League action and just the normal Premier League matches. So fixture congestion is bad, but the fixtures are really nice. And Antonio doesn't really have any direct competition. There isn't another striker. There's other players they can play in that false nine position. But as out and out strikers go, they're going to need Antonio over the next few weeks. So maybe we get some managed minutes coming off on 60, 70, something like that. But he's going to play the majority of these fixtures. And that's exactly what you want over the busy Christmas period.
If you had no West Ham players, Jules, which ones would you be looking at? Who are the best options? Because some people will have sold Mikel Antonio and will want to weigh into this West Ham team, particularly in attack.
Yeah, I had Antonio. I sold him when he started being picked up by caller by Jamaica, because I thought those trips in the international break, which he didn't used to do before, where he could be in London, rest, and then go again, especially with his very physical style of play, I think going all the way, playing there, albeit doing well, and he scored in the last international break in the two games that he played with them, fantastic for the confidence. But still, I think in terms of fitness and tiredness, I thought that was a bad idea. That's why I sold him. And I'm not sure I'll bring him back. I think I'm because of that, I think at some point, he's so strong physically that he can probably, you know, sort of shrug it off. But I still think that Bowen right now is a better option to have. He's got more energy. He's got more to his game, I think, than Antonio in a way. So I don't think I'd bring either of them, but maybe Bowen more than Antonio, just purely on the fitness side of things and the tiredness side of things.
At the other end of the FDR are Newcastle, getting their first win of the season last weekend, but now their fixtures do turn. It's Leicester, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, before they then face Everton and Southampton. What do Callum Wilson owners do now, Sam? Because he's shown form, scored that winner last weekend.
I don't think you can sell Callum Wilson. You know, I look at the fixture that they have this weekend and think, that Leicester City defence has been not incredibly solid over the last few weeks. They're definitely at risk of conceding goals. Callum Wilson's route to points is great because obviously he has the penalties in his locker as well. If I was a Callum Wilson owner, I would have him for this weekend. I think he could do well against Leicester. And then after that, Liverpool, Man City, Manchester United, those would be the games that I would be looking to sell him for.
Yeah, Callum Wilson did score twice away at Leicester last season as well. A quick word on Leeds as well, because we asked on Twitter at Official FPL this week, with Leeds travelling to Chelsea, Manchester City and Liverpool within the next four matches, Rafinha owners, what are your plans for the Brazilian? The outcome was 57.8% said sell, 26% said keep and 16.3% said bench. Jules, you've already sold him. Tom, what are you doing with him with those fixtures ahead?
I have also sold him. So I'm with the 57.8% sellers. I mean, yeah, just looking at those fixtures, Chelsea away, Man City away, Arsenal at home, Liverpool away, three of the hardest fixtures that they're going to have all season, plus Arsenal. I do worry that that's going to backfire because Rafinha is such a good player. He can turn it on against anyone. He also takes a lot of the set pieces and he's been in decent form of late. I've had him in since the start of the season and he's generally done the business for me. But I just think when the fixtures plunge off a cliff like that, it's hard to keep faith with a player, even one as talented as Rafinha. I've moved him on and you know, may well promptly come to regret that. Who knows?
So Tom has moved Rafinha on, and conveniently, that's what we're doing next, finding out who our panel have transferred in and out and who they're captaining. Okay, so time now to see how our panel's teams are shaping up. Tom, you've already told us that you've sold Rafinha. You've gone early this week, have you?
Yeah, I've broken one of my rules in going early with my transfers. I'd rolled two transfers over for this week and I decided over the weekend what I was going to do with them. So I moved out Rafinha and Alassane Maximin, given that Leeds and Newcastle's fixtures are about to dive, and replaced them with Bernardo Silva and Emmanuel Dennis, two informed players. Plus, I've got flags against Ivan Toney and Emile Smith Rowe. So I'm looking at a 4-point
minus eight.
Hit at the very least. At the very least,
there's a free hit coming here.
It feels like a cautionary tale. Ordinarily on this podcast, I try to give people sort of like sensible, well thought out advice, but occasionally you just have to show people what not to do by making really rash knee jerk decisions, and that's basically exactly what I've done this week.
Would you say you've almost learnt the hard way that maybe at this time of year, with all of the uncertainty and with all of the fixtures, that you would advise listeners to potentially wait a little bit longer before making transfers?
I mean, ordinarily, yes, but I'd rolled these two free transfers for 3 weeks. I've never shown so much transfer restraint in my entire...
And then you went mad, Tom.
FPL
career. And you used them all on Monday.
And I was like, I have earned the right to make these transfers on like Sunday night or Monday or whenever it was that I did them, because I've shown such patience. And here we are a few days later and my plans are just, you know, up in the air. So a cautionary tale. I mean, at the same time, I'm quite... happy with the way my team looks, provided they can play. provided, the only slight drawback is that some of my most important players won't actually get onto the pitch. But apart from that, the team looks great.
It's a bit of a problem, Tom.
A minor inconvenience.
Yeah, minor inconvenience. Who needs players in their FPL team anyway? Jules, what about you? Who have you actually got in your team? I'm hoping you're feeling a bit more confident about whatever you've done or whatever you're going to do.
My players look fitter than Tom's, for sure. But the Ronaldo for Kane move will happen this week, before the weekend. Harry, as we said, me and Sam are sorry. We have to let you go now. It's time for you to move
on. It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is heartbreaking because, as we've been explaining, you know, it's part of the family here. But we've kept faith with you for too long. That's, you know, Sam would be probably first in the world if she never, you know, put her eyes on you, my friend. So, no Harry Kane anymore. And hello, Cristiano. Welcome to the team.
A nice transfer. Sam, I'm not going to say you copying Jules because I would never accuse you
of
doing such a thing.
We know that by now.
No, that's the transfer you've made as well. Am I correct?
Yeah, I haven't done it yet, but I am going to do it. It's one of those annoying ones where at the beginning of the week, I was planning on doing it, but unlike Tom, I hate making transfers at the beginning of the week. So even though Kane was dropping and Ronaldo was rising, so it actually cost me 0.2 extra in price tag to do this swap, I decided to wait just to see what happens. I, like Tom, also have two free transfers. So Ronaldo and Kane is definitely going to be one of them. And then I'm just waiting on press conferences and news before the others. Smith Rowe, if he doesn't make it, is also one that I could potentially look to move out.
And captaincy, very quickly, Salah at home to Aston Villa. Anyone not going with the Egyptian? Tumbleweed, silence.
Tumbleweed.
So no, you know what I did 3 weeks ago? I captained Trent for the Southampton game and he got more points than Salah and I was really happy. And then I captained Kane 1 week, which I know.
I did the same, Jules. I captained Kane.
Did you? Oh, that makes me feel better if a pro like you. And then went back to Salah, of course, like everybody. Yep. Although Trent had more points than Salah last week as well. In the Wolves game. So it's a crazy one, but I think I will stick with Salah. Although I can hear Trent's voice in my head saying, come on, Jules, come on, captain me again. So I don't know.
Can you do it? Can you do it in Trent's accent, please, Jules?
He would want.
Also, I think Cristiano Ronaldo is calling for the captain's armband as well with these fixtures that they have coming up. But it's a brave FPL manager that takes that armband away from Salah, because if he bangs and you've not captained him, that red arrow is absolutely guaranteed.
That Southampton game was the one of the most stressful games I watched, because obviously with Trent with my armband, I was like, come on, please don't let me down now. And that worked out well. Obviously not so much with the Kane one, so we'll see.
Some stats to back up your decision there with Trent Alexander-Arnold. 9 points last weekend, maximum bonus points for the fifth time this season. He's actually the second highest scoring player in the game as well. So Jules, for once, that was one of your more sensible decisions.
Thank you for once, you know.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. I will leave you to your busy days. That is all from us this week. A reminder to keep an eye on at Official FPL and the fantasy.premierleague.com website for all of the latest team news and availability ahead of game week 16. Get your team sorted by Friday at 6:30 UK time. And also do make sure you check back in with us on Monday next week, because we will have another pod ahead of next week's midweek fixtures. Enjoy the game week and we'll see you next week.